If you like weird history, true crime, haunted and paranormal, then pause the podcast you're listening to right now and subscribe to Ghost Town wherever you listen to podcasts. We also have a video component to our favorite Ghost Town episodes at youtube.com/Jason Horton. Episodes like The Los Feliz Murder House, The Toxic Lady, The Black Dahlia, Janis Joplin's Hotel Room, The Haunted Roosevelt Hotel, and more. Just go to youtube.com/Jason Horton. That's youtube.com/JasonHorton. And while you're there, please subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. Thank you. Support for today's show comes from Harry's.com. Go to Harry's.com/friends to get a free trial shave set. You just pay for the shipping. And RX Bar. Go to RXBar.com/FWB and put FWB in the checkout code to get 25% off your order. All right, let's do it. It's Friends Without Friends Without Benefits podcast. My name is Jason Horton. Welcome to the show. Today, I sit down and I chat with Douglas Kim. Doug has his own Facebook watch show. That's Facebook's original programming. It's called Just Doug. And he is also a professional poker player. He was in the World Series of Poker. And so I talk in depth about that. I probably could have talked to him for another hour about that. I want to talk about Harry's.com. This worked out great. I actually needed good quality razors because I had an audition, which I needed to be clean shaven, and I'm not always clean shaven, and I usually dread it when I do. It's very expensive razors, or I gotta go get them, or if I get the cheap ones, because maybe I only need to do it for one day, they hurt my face, so I already have enough trouble going to auditions that I don't need a red, irritated face. So I had a great shave with Harry's. I went into the audition super confident, a nice, smooth, non-irritated shave. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price. That's why 3 million guys have already switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys fed up with getting charged an arm and a leg for razor blades, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry stripped away all the unnecessary features, vibrating handles and heating blades, and all the unnecessary cost to deliver customers one perfect razor at an amazing price. There's a good shave, good blades, and Harry's owns the factory. So they're able to deliver amazing quality blades for about $2 a blade compared to $4 or more you're going to pay anywhere else. And all the products are backed with a 100% quality guarantee. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades, they're going to give you a trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/friends. You just pay for the shipping. Claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value for free when you sign up. You just have to cover shipping. It includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Go get your free trial set at harrys.com/friends right now. That's harrys.com/friends. For those of you keeping up with my stand-up career, I guess, it's not really a career, but for those of you keeping up with it, I had a really, really good show at Flappers in Burbank that I may have mentioned I was doing on the last episode. I think it was one of my best, I think. The reaction made me feel that way. And what was exciting is I didn't really open for, but she was on the lineup and I went up before her. But Mary Lynn Ricecube, who played on 24, Chloe O'Brien, played the tech person. She was the main cast, main part of the show. But she's super funny. She's Gail the Snail on It's Always Sunny and about a million other things. And it was, I was just like, I didn't want to go on before her and not be good. So the people watching her going, wow, Mary Lynn, you're a funny professional. And the person who went on before you was really terrible. So we're really happy you were here. But I wanted to do good because I'm a greedy, selfish person and I want to do well. But I also, I want people to be in good spirits when the next person goes up. They're not like starting from zero. So that was like super exciting. I mean, I know like for a lot of people that do stand up, they perform with really great people all the time. And I perform with hilarious people. Like I was like, everyone is so good here. But when it's somebody that's like a celebrity type, I don't know. I just thought it was really cool. I actually did a last minute show a couple of nights ago, and it was for the most part an all gay show, the same place, Flappers, and I was happy to do it. I want the stage time. I just like to perform. I like to see people that I've never seen perform before. And then I was like, oh, do I need to change my act? I don't know, whatever it is. I mean, I was like, I could be, I mean, listen, I'm not the most, you know, typical macho. Is that even a word? Is macho even a word anymore? I'm not that. So it's not like people are going to be like, who's this cool jock? I don't, whatever. My words are archaic. I don't know what I'm saying. But I was a little bit nervous that maybe they were like, oh, we don't, it's dumb. Like, it's like, we don't, but other comics were kind of making like kind of light references to me, like another stand-up that was a straight guy that was up there. So I felt like I needed to address it, but like, I was just like, you know, kind of not really apologizing, but, you know, I was like, you know, full disclosure, I'm straight. And I mean, honestly, throughout my life, I've had to tell girls that. In dating, I was like, full disclosure, I'm straight. And they're like, yeah, right. So it all worked out. It was a great show. Everyone was super funny. Now I want to get into my conversation with Douglas Kim. Again, this poker, it's like, thing is really intriguing to me because, I mean, I go to Las Vegas a lot and I see it through, you know, a very cursory, pedestrian kind of lens. But when I hear about it, and almost like a, well, it's a sport, it's and it's celebrity, it's all those things, and just kind of hearing about it from someone who sat at the table, at, like, I guess the highest stakes thing, because there's a point where you're not, you don't know poker, and then there's a point where you're sitting at the table, and I wanted to find out what went on between that and that, and then being like, you know what, I was like, I have, you know, been doing acting, I am going to now put that out there, kind of full on, and then he got his own Facebook show, which at a point where it's like, Facebook, they don't have their own show, and it's like, oh, now they do, and Doug has it, so let's talk to Doug.
So, you know, what's interesting is you have something in common with my wife.
Or
I'm in love with both of you. Is that weird? Is that the thing? Why can't it be that?
I was like, are we both Korean? I don't know.
No, unfortunately.
Yeah.
She's like Russian.
Yeah. Me alone a bride.
I know. No, yeah. No, I wouldn't have ordered her. I'm kidding. I would have ordered her. No, I wouldn't have. Why are you trying to get me to admit that I would pay for a wife? I can't afford it. I can't afford it. I do
a
podcast.
I'm getting to that point.
Yeah.
So,
I can't afford it. She is, and this is something I've never really experienced. She's also was I don't know if she was semi-pro poker player.
So oh,
she, yeah.
Okay.
So she, you know, sometimes we'll like see like a certain celebrity. She's like, oh, I used to play poker with him at a celebrity tournament.
It's funny because you're not the first Jewish person who has a Russian wife. Mm-hmm. That also plays poker that yeah. I know.
Okay, so. Cool. So I'm just, you
apparently
know,
it's a thing.
Yeah, I thought I was special. But yeah, she still goes to like
the bike.
She goes to down that card house.
Commerce.
She goes. She'll go down to Commerce, or she's in Vegas. She'll like play like a tournament or something like
sure.
that. I don't think she's like hustling and grinding like maybe she used to.
Yeah.
But that's like kind of like. You're known for that, right? Being a pro poker player.
Yeah. No, that was like that was a while ago when I final table the World Series in 2006. But yeah, the game's gotten a lot harder since then. It's gotten a lot tougher, for sure.
But how does it get like the game doesn't change? So how does it get tougher?
It's similar to how like chess, for example, before computers, you know, there was, you know, they were the grandmasters and, you know, they knew what was going on. But, you know, in the 90s when Deep Blue beat Garry Kasparov, you know, it was like, whoa, like the best person in the world is beaten by a machine. And the machine, it wasn't because like, it was just because the machine can see like all these possible different combinations. And so with poker in the early 2000s, you know, online poker became really popular. And because of that, you know, it wasn't that machines were learning, but it was that humans were learning with a larger data set. They were playing millions and millions of hands. And so with that, they were able to extract theories about poker that were a lot different than, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Just by nature of having like tons of data and being able to parse through it and being able to figure out, okay, what's the best possible game theory optimal solution for these types of games. And over time, like even 5 years ago, people started using AI kind of like solvers that like you would plug in certain like parameters within the program and it would give you like the game theory optimal solution towards it. And we're getting to the point where, you know, I wouldn't say the game is solved per se, but it's getting closer to it.
Do you think the player's ages, like, because, you know, when you're, you know, younger and you're kind of born into like the internet, your brain might be more supple to absorb kind of like that way of learning as opposed to somebody who's like well into playing poker the way they've been playing it or playing chess the way they've been playing it, and they're not as ready to adapt to like kind of learning that way. Do you think age has anything to do with it?
Of course, yeah. Age has a lot to do with it. I mean, in the online poker, like 10 years ago, when it became like super popular, you know, you had all these, you know, internet whiz kids just like blasting through and like playing like nosebleed high stakes. And you see the old guard, the you know, the personalities you see on the World Series of Poker, they started to die out because they weren't adapting to the new type of online play. And yeah, just coupled with that and then the 2011 crackdown on online internet gambling.
Sure. I've heard that the stories of woe.
Just like destroyed the poker economy, like the, I guess, the ecosystem, so to speak. And so, like, the games have just become that much harder because, you know, the recreational players now have no way of playing. And so all you have are just a collection of pros just, like, fighting for each other's money.
Is it, like is it feasible for a really good poker player to make a living playing poker year-round? Not just, like, doing one – I mean, is that something – or is the chances of you losing so high, you there's just no way of knowing that you're going to make a living from doing it.
It depends on your skill level. I mean, if you are one of the best in the world, I mean, obviously it's still very profitable.
Right.
But yeah, like, I guess over time that threshold has gotten harder and harder to make money. But yeah, I mean, like, I have friends that play professionally year long and do this for a living, and yeah, they can consistently win. Not like every session, but like, you know.
But overall, it's not about one or, you know, right. It's like you could, you know, if you lose $100 one day, because I know that you're playing those big stakes, $100. I know it's big money in poker. But you might win like $200 the next day.
Sure.
You know, and if you lose $50 and you win $300, you know what I mean? So it's a longer game.
Right.
I just learned how to play craps at a very basic level. I don't really gamble, but I was like, this is kind of fun because it's very inclusive.
Yeah, it's a very communal game, craps.
Yeah, I would, when I play, you know, I'd stay at like the Encore, but I'd play at Circus because it's like $5. I'm willing to lose that, but I'm not willing to, you know, play like $25, you know,
sure,
chips or whatever. Well, let's go back. Like, I just wanted to start there.
Sure.
I was looking around, you're from Yonkers?
I was born in Yonkers.
You're born in Yonkers.
But I grew up nearby. I mean, I grew up 4 or 5 years in Yonkers.
Yeah.
So I lived there for a little bit, and then I moved to a town called Hartsdale. But really, I was like in the Ardsley School District.
I know. I dated a girl from Ardsley.
So you're from Westchester.
I'm not from Westchester.
Okay.
I'll explain where I'm from.
Okay.
And I think you're going to get it. You'll get it. Because Scarsdale's right next to Ardsley, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I was – my family kind of originated in New Jersey.
Okay.
My dad stayed in New Jersey, and my mom took us to upstate. But upstate – it's weird. When
like
talk to
Albany?
People, no, upstate. Upstate
– Poughkeepsie if, type?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what I was going to – so I grew up in Newburgh is where I went to.
Okay.
But when I say Newburgh out here, no one knows it, even though it's such like a big – it's a big – a lot of crime and stuff. But I went to high school in Newburgh. But if I say Poughkeepsie – everybody knows
yeah.
it. And there was a time I lived in Poughkeepsie, for, you know, that's that area or whatever.
Sure.
So that's the area I grew up in. You obviously know what that is.
Yeah.
Like, I went to community college in Rockland County.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. That's
so it would
cold.
Be, yeah. So it's like Orange, Rockland, and then I guess Westchester, right?
Yeah.
Or then be like, you know what I mean? Like, going up there. And so you grew up in Westchester.
Right.
Yeah.
Lucky you. Lucky. See, for me, Westchester was always like, I mean, and from what I knew, and my very kind of narrow view was just like Westchester was like rich people.
Yeah.
And Jews.
No,
and Jews. And Jews.
Jews, Italians, yeah. A very small contingent of Koreans, yeah. And a lot of, yeah, WASP. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened in Westchester what was your like goal? Like, was poker like something you were like?
Oh no, poker came in late in my life, okay. When after I finished high school, actually.
Well, that's very late in your life.
Yeah,
it's so late,
so late, super late.
You're done, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. You know. When I grew up, I grew up to like obviously Korean American parents, who came to the States shortly before, you know, my sister and I were born.
I was in Seoul recently, so
okay,
I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was there for a week. Okay, I think I get it.
Yeah, no, I was there recently last year for the first time by myself. But yeah, So they came to America. I think, you know, with the obvious immigrant, like, you know, making a better life for themselves, because, you know, they came from they were born right after like the Korean War had just happened, and so they had this strong sense of like, you need a sense of security, you need like, you know, a job after college, blah, blah, blah. So that's the big like Korean American mentality from that generation, and so that's why a lot of like Korean Americans were like brought up and raised to be like very educationally like, this is important, blah, blah, blah. So my sister and I, we kind of were in that kind of crucible of like education is number one and key. And, you know, being Westchester, it's full of like Jewish people, Italian people, and all these people.
Living in upstate, education was number 9 or 11 for us, or 15. Yours is number 1. Ours, it was like fast food, don't get arrested. And then like education was like number 15. On that list, that list that doesn't exist.
No, it was 1 through 15.
Okay, yours 1 through 15. Ours started at 15. And so what was the plan for you?
So yeah, I mean, like it was funny because like, you know, my dad's a doctor, and so I guess there was like maybe like a slight expectation that I'd follow in the family footsteps and become a doctor too. But I think it was more like, when I grew up, it was like, okay, the parents are just like, say, just study hard and, you know, the rest will fall into place. And, you know, all you need is a good education and you'll be set for life. And so that's kind of like the mentality I grew up with. I don't think like I had like a clear like, oh, I want to be this, I want to be that, blah, blah, blah. I think it was by high school, middle school, where I was like, oh, I like love video games. I love playing video games, you know, like, what if I became a video game developer? What if I became like, you know, someone who was involved in that? And so I think late in my high school career, I started to like think I was going to, you know, study computer science. And I applied to like MIT, Harvard, blah, blah, blah. Didn't get in, but.
What?
Yeah, I didn't get into 6 of the 9 colleges I applied to. And that was another funny story, I guess, like, because I eventually got into Duke, which is, you know, the top 10 school.
But it's not number 1.
Right. So it's funny because, yeah, my parents kind of had an issue at the time with it. Disclaimer, they said they've gotten over it by now. Or my
spoiler alert, they've gotten over it.
But there was actually a little bit of a, you know, contentious time because, like, it was like, oh, I guess you got into Duke. I guess that's fine, you know, like, because my sister went to Harvard, and so, like, expectations were...
Did she hold that over your head a lot?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah,
course.
Of course.
Yeah, I went to Harvard, you know.
Yeah. She's like, why would I listen to you? I went to Harvard. Can you even read?
Yeah, it's like the whole point of getting to Harvard is to say you got into Harvard.
Yeah, I would never if I had 6-pack abs, I would never wear a shirt. And if I went to Harvard, I would literally start and end every conversation with, I went to Harvard.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why wouldn't you? I mean,
I don't know. That's what you're paying for. But what, like, then what did you do? Because poker, you said, came a little bit later.
Sure.
Which is an interesting thing to, because I don't, because there's a point where you don't know how to play poker at all.
Right.
And then you're like, what is the poker? Not only how do I learn how to play it more than having fun, how do I become very good at it and then, you know, win a big tournament?
Sure.
of it. How does that like come? Like, what? How does that happen?
So it was funny because before I even started playing poker, I had this like aversion to gambling. I was a very risk averse person.
I'm like that too. What comes with gambling? You know, when it comes to like rock and roll and women, man.
Yeah,
I roll the dice every single time. Well, never, I never do. I never ever do. But I just wanted to say I did. But yeah, I'm of that mind.
Yeah. So I never even touched gambling before that. Like, it was the senior year, summer after senior year. My friend, who's a year above me, he went to college. He went to Northwestern, and he came back and I guess, you know, in college you experience a lot of things, and one of the things he experienced was like, oh, I played some poker with some buddies. It's this awesome game, blah, blah, blah. Like, and like there's a strategy to it, and like, you know, if you follow these strategies, you'll like come out ahead, and it's like all about the long term. And I was like, really? Whatever. I was like, okay.
What about a Roth IRA? That's
yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's pretty much.
That's what
me.
I would say.
Yeah, at the age of 18, I was like, you know. But
a high yield bond. What about that?
Exactly. But yeah, we ended up playing at like a 5 cent, 10 cent limit game. So, you know, it was very low stakes, but like, you know, immediately I was hooked. And
that's how people get addicted to gambling and ruin their lives.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, that's.
And like, I played my freshman year at Duke. And I was very obsessed with it because like,
did it affect
your
grades at all?
Oh, it certainly, it trashed my grades. And that was another point of contention with me and my parents. And not only that, I actually lost money, my freshman year. It was like $400, playing in like maybe $20 like home games. Which, you know, in the grand scheme of things isn't a lot, but, you know, as a college freshman,
and you're losing stinks,
right?
You know,
it's just like I felt like I could be good at this game. Like, why am I not succeeding, or why, like there's something to it. So over that summer, I got a lot of books and read a lot of books, and I also started to, there was a forum called 2+2, that was, mainly geared towards poker playing. And so, you know, I would post hands on these forums and like get feedback and like, oh, like how do I play this or whatever, as well as signing up for online gambling more. I think I signed up for online poker my sophomore year, and there was this thing called bonus whoring, where like they gave you like 20% bonus like that you'd have to play through, and then like you could just move your bankroll to another site and just do the same thing. And then that's how people built up their bankrolls. And yeah, that sophomore year, it's kind of when I like kind of cut my teeth a little bit, playing online and like signing up for, I also bought like a statistical tracking site that like tracks your hand histories and like how you're playing and so on and so forth. And so
is there fun in playing, or is it just become like, all strategy, or is there like fun to be had?
There's definitely fun. I mean, I think in the early stages, when you're first getting into it, when you're first like, it's just so intellectually stimulating.
Right. And it's a little bit of adrenaline and
right.
excitement. And,
oh, yeah. I think like you definitely have fun, or my biggest fun was like when I was 21. This was even before the World Series or whatever. But, you know, you're allowed to go to Vegas, right? You're allowed to gamble. You're allowed to do stuff. So when you turn 21 and you go to these casinos for the first time and you're playing, like, with actual chips that, like, represent real dollars, you're like, holy crap, this is awesome. Like, and you're just crushing these noobs at the table. And it's just, like, you feel, like, invincible. So that's definitely the highlight, I guess, like, or one of the highlights of becoming a poker player. When you turn 21, it's just like this rush of just, you can do anything.
You want to know something that makes me feel like I can do anything? Talking about my sponsor, support for the show, RX Bar. Love it. I've been eating it for, this is where things get exciting for me. Mm. I've been eating RX Bars for years, and I'm just like one of those people that are very particular about protein. I've been eating protein bars, I feel like, since I've been 18, and they are sometimes they're not that good, and I'm really particular about like the protein quality. And RX Bar, I was just like, it's great. It's egg whites. I like egg whites. And if you go to RX Bar, Shopify.com/FWB and put in the code FWB at checkout. You get 25% off. The ingredients are right on the label is so clear, and it just lists what's on the label, like egg whites, dates, almonds. They're real food, real ingredients. I am usually a fan of like the berry flavors, the blueberry, all the berry type flavors, because I like the fruit flavors, but I've been in love with the peanut butter chocolate, the chocolate and peanut butter. I've become a little bit hooked on. So I've been eating like, I feel like I've been eating like two of those a day. I should be mixing it up, gonna mix it up, but I can't let go of that chocolate and peanut butter. But if you like sweet, savory, chocolate, fruit, there's an RX bar for you. There's 11 flavors, so you'll never, ever get bored. They're gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, no added sugar. It's free of all the stuff you don't want, and it has all the stuff that you do want. It's great for protein, pre-workout, post-workout. I definitely always have one pre-workout, and now I'm starting to include one post-workout, but I definitely always have one pre-workout for that energy. It's great for breakfast on the go, snack at the office. You're taking a flight, no excuse. Get an RX bar. You can put it in your backpack for a bike ride. And the egg white protein is like what I'm just so particular about that. And it just tastes good. I just like the taste of it. And it's hard when you have to like force yourself to eat something you don't want to eat. I'm particular about calories. I'm particular about ingredients. And then I'm very particular about taste. So RX bar is something I've already been eating. So I'm very, very happy to talk about it. But if you go to rxbar.com/FWB, put in the code FWB at checkout, you get 25% off. That's rxbar.com/FWB, and then put FWB in the checkout for 25% off. Okay, poker.
Okay.
Okay, poker. So now you're getting into the, it's getting hot. Things are starting to...
Right, in college, in junior
And I also was reading that like this kind of was happening for you around the same time. Economically, the world was in that kind of weird place. Is that something?
So I started. I guess my freshman year was around 2002.
Okay, so not yet.
So yeah, not yet. 2003 was the moneymaker year.
Yeah,
I don't know if you know about Chris Moneymaker.
Christopher Moneymaker?
Yeah,
I don't know, but I want to know all about Chris Moneymaker.
So in 2003, Chris Moneymaker, he was this guy who won the World Series of Poker. His name was actually Moneymaker.
So he can't not make money, or people would never let him live it down.
Right.
I mean, he had to be working.
It was like a weird, like Hollywood, like straight out of Hollywood story. He like qualified by playing like one of these online qualifiers on. So how it works is like you maybe spend like $200 or whatever, and you play like a tournament where the grand prize is a seat to the World Series. So this was on Poker Stars where he played, and he played one of these, and he went to the World Series and he actually won it. And this was the first time on TV where they introduced the hold cam. It's a very simple concept, right? The hold cam that sees your cards. But up to 2003, no person had ever done this before. Where like, because like in poker, you just like kind of like watch them, or when it was televised, you just watch them, and you know, if the hand was showed down, like, oh, you get to see what they had. But like now, it's like, oh, we could see what everyone has with these hold cams.
And that makes it more exciting,
right? Exactly, for the viewer,
because you're kind of in on the
right.
It's interesting. How do they know how to like? Because the player doesn't. He knows his cards.
Yeah. So the player has to like go like that.
Oh, okay, so that's how they're filming.
Yeah. So there's a cold cam that's the table.
Right.
Like embedded in the table. And so
so you're like playing along in a way.
Kind of, yeah. So like this was the first time they were doing this whole cam thing, and this, you know, this nobody, Chris Moneymaker, like comes out of nowhere. I mean, like all the other past champions, they've had like experience in the poker world before they became champions, but this is like, you know, out of nowhere, this guy like just takes it down, and it almost like causes, I don't know if that was a single cause or one of the causes, but there was this poker boom that happened from 2003 to 2006, essentially, where like everyone and their mother wanted to get into poker. And that was like during the time that I was starting to get into poker as well, so I was very fortunate to like just be in that poker boom, like during the height of all, you know, the poker stuff that's going on. And by my junior year, I was making significant amount of money, you know, where I was buying like a plasma TV or whatever, like random things in like a dorm room that shouldn't be in a dorm room. But I think like I was still like, you know, quote unquote, you know, doing the Asian thing by, you know, putting in, you know, a good amount of time studying and like, cause after my freshman year, I had a little talking to and like, and you know, like a little like of the, what are we paying $40,000-$50,000 a year for if you're just going to like, you know, not get good grades?
Did you just believe kind of like, I'll show you, like, I'm going to be successful at this? Or did you not know what was ahead of you?
I didn't know. Okay. I had no idea. It was kind of
like... You had a plasma
like,
TV, so you're like...
Yeah.
I'm already ahead, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, I never thought of it as a career, actually, during college. It was more like, I can do this on the side. I can make some money. I can make some good money and have some fun doing it. I thought like, you know, during the time it was just so easy to make money. I was like, oh, it's always going to be there. It's always going to be, you know, easy, you know, but you know, let me just have that. But also like explore other things as well. And that was kind of my mentality. Like after a while, like by my senior year, I was like, you know what, poker's fun, but I couldn't see myself being like a professional poker player. Like,
What could you see yourself being at that point?
I mean, I had already applied, so I had transitioned, I guess, into economics or studying economics, and I was sold on being a consultant. It seemed interesting to me.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, it sounds cool. I learned later on that, you know, it wasn't everything I thought it was, but that's for later. But
that's for part seven of this anthology series.
Exactly. But I think it wasn't presented to me in a way where like, oh, you're using your strategical mind and you're applying it to the real world. You're like going to these companies and like, how can we make this more efficient? How can we make this more effective? And that was like appealing to me, where I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. How do I, you know, come in and like, you know, try to solve these people's problems in business. And so I was already going to do that, or I had gotten a job doing that in January of my senior year, or like lined up to do that. And so that was kind of like my mentality. And then like, I was also like, by the summer I was kind of thinking like, you know what, why don't I have one last hurrah? Why don't I have like one last ride or whatever in poker? And so that's when I decided to like play a lot of these tournaments, the same ones that Chris Moneymaker had played, in order to win a seat to get to the World Series. And so I did that all summer after my senior year. And I actually managed to win the very last one like 5 days before the main event.
And so what? So were you like, were you preparing to be part of the World Series of Poker, or were you like, this is like a shot in the dark?
I was just ready to experience. Yeah. I was just ready to take in and see what happens. I just wanted a story before, you know, because I was going to start work maybe like a couple months later. So I was like, you know what, let's just...
It's like your bachelor party.
Sort of.
You were getting... It's like, a different kind of bachelor party. Well, no, maybe it's not a different kind
Some people, that does it for them, so.
So when you're at the World Series of Poker, do you feel like once you were there, you're like, oh, I've been preparing for this the whole time? Or were you like, wow, this is like not what you expected? Or initially, or were you like, I'm good.
I was amped. I was definitely amped. I mean, I'm a 22-year-old guy at that point.
And so fear, like your fear level is probably like a little bit low because you are 22. Because maybe if you were doing it and you're like, you know, 32 or 35, you're like, oh, am I too old for this? Or like, what am I doing? Like, I should be, you know what I mean? I should have a house. You know, or those, you know, those things you have when you get a little bit older, you feel like the stakes are a little bit higher. But
sure.
When you're 22, you're just like, I literally, this is like, the fact that I'm here is amazing.
Yeah, let's
I've
go.
Already won.
Let's
yeah,
do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you intimidated?
Well, I had actually gone the year before because my friend, the same friend mm-hmm. that went to Northwestern, won a seat prior, and then he played in 2005. And I had already kind of like seen the scene a little bit, so I had a little bit of, you know,
did some recon.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I wasn't like too like, oh my god, deer in the headlights. But it was like pretty nerve wracking, you know, this first few hands.
Do you wear like did you have like a hood on?
I did
on?
Have sunglasses, unfortunately. I know it's a cliche.
But is it important?
On, but so it can be important in if it gives the person wearing it a certain sense of comfort,
yeah.
Right? Like, you know, when you wear sunglasses, no one can really tell where you're looking, right?
Yeah.
So, like, sometimes it gives you the freedom to look where
or
you
a tear
want.
Running down. If they don't see the tears welling up in your eyes,
right.
You know what I mean? If you're like, I can't do it, and the tears are welling up, they can't see that.
Right.
That's why I wear them day to day, though, so people can't see me crying about my life as I'm walking down the street.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want people see you crying during a bad beat either. So,
yeah.
Obviously.
Oh, bad beat. My wife talks about that all the time. She's like, yeah, I had a couple of bad beats, whatever. So I'm familiar with the lingo.
All right,
Yeah.
But yeah, I did have this. I had Oakley sunglasses.
Oh.
Yeah, this is 2006.
Okay, so it fits.
Okay.
Yeah. But still, even 2006, that was not
yeah,
a good look.
Right.
Sorry, everybody. Sorry, 2006 Oakley wearers. Not a good look.
Yeah. So I also had a Poker Stars hat on.
So you're wearing a poker hat to a poker thing?
Yeah, because like
it's like wearing the shirt of the concert.
They
that you're
give
at.
You they give you like $1,000.
Oh, it's a sponsor
for wearing their thing during the
oh,
event.
Oh, okay. I'd wear five of them then.
And then since I made the final table, actually, they gave me $100K for making the final table.
Whoa. Sam, you okay over there? You just audibly, is that Soylent really getting to you? It's really hit you. You heard that and you're like, I will never see that amount of money in my entire life if I live to be 500. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know if Sam here thinking the same thing. You didn't break the podcast, did you?
No.
Okay, good. Okay. Yeah, $100,000. You're talking about, it's like, yeah, they gave me, I don't know, $100,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
I would tattoo their thing on my eyeballs for a tenth of that. But go on.
So yeah, I mean, this was even before the patch and the all this other stuff like became like sponsorships and whatever.
It's almost like a race car driver in a way, yeah.
Because like, you know, Poker Stars from 2003, 2004, 2005, they had every winner from 2003 to 2005 was actually Poker Stars sponsored, or they won a seat through Poker Stars or something. So they had it in their best interest to keep the, you know, the brand awareness.
But knowing
going.
You had $100,000, weren't you like, I already won.
Oh, no. This is like for making the final table.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I would be sitting there being like, I already feel like I've, you know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah. So the final table at that year, in this year, the minimum payout like for ninth place was like, I don't know, something probably like 1.4 million. So 100K, you know, it's 100K, but, you know, you've already won that much too. So
I
can see your face.
As soon as you said Westchester, I knew this was going to be trouble. Okay, so you knew even before you got there, you're going to have a minimum. Like you can't totally crap out.
No, not before. Like so, you had to make so top 10% gets paid money.
Right, and you made the top 10%.
You have to make it day three or day four.
But you did do that. You made.
Yeah, I mean, I made the. You know, this. I made the final table, so that's the top 0.1%.
So colleges, you were only top 10. I didn't forget that you only went to Duke. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw that in your face.
All right.
But so you made the top 1% even before you put a hand down.
No. Okay. This was like you had to play through to get to the, you know.
Right.
So the tournament works where everyone sits at a table. It's 9 people a table. And when someone gets eliminated or they lose all their chips, they're out.
Okay.
So it's a battle of attrition, basically.
You're grinding.
So like when I say the top 1% or the top 10%, that means if there were 1,000 players, there's only 100 players remaining now. And like when enough players get eliminated, they break the table and they put the players in different seats at another table that are empty.
So what ended up happening with this?
Ended up happening with what?
With your at the end of this at this World
Series.
Oh,
so I ended up finishing in seventh place.
And what does that yield?
A little less than $2.4 million. US.
Do you hear the silence?
Sam, you okay? What are we doing wrong? beside everything. So, I mean, were you... All right, number one, I would have called my parents and I would go, in your face, call my sister and be like, I'll go by Harvard. I mean, is that what you like did? Like, what then?
Well... And my immediate reaction was one of disappointment because I, you know, you want to win, right? You want to win the top prize. You want to...
If I find a dollar in my pocket, I'm like, whoa, things are looking up.
Well, at that point, because, like, so when there's seven players...
So you want to win, too. There's, a thing about winning. Like, the money is wonderful for me as an outsider.
Right.
But for you as an insider, that's been working
hard. And first place money was $12 million, so there's that.
What are you going to do with $12 million?
Five times as much as I would do with 2.4.
I mean, you pulled up here and you drove five Teslas here. I saw you pull up. I'm just kidding. I don't know how you drove five of them at the same time. So you win. Did your life change after that?
So, funnily enough, it didn't really because, like, you know, I was, you know, while it is a lot of money, you know, Uncle Sam takes their share, and
Then you're what is that?
Yeah,
it's like, you got 1.8.
It's a little less than $1 million.
Okay.
It hurt a little bit, but not only that, it was kind of like, you know, I'm starting a career in New York as a management consultant for financial industries, and you know, if I play my cards right in this industry, you know, this money, while you know sizable, will be kind of just like the basis of a nest egg.
Yeah.
You know, apartments in Manhattan run for
A
gajillion dollars for, you know, a studio. So it wasn't like, quote unquote, fuck you money. It was more like, okay, this is comfortable. Like I can kind of like have a little safety net kind of money. So being, you know, the conservative person that I am, I was just like, all right, I'm just going to start my work as planned in September and just, you know, live normally as much as I can. I didn't, like, go out and buy a crazy car or whatever. I made a few, like, you know, purchases.
A bigger plasma TV?
Yeah, pretty much.
What's your family? What did people you know what I mean? Like, do people around you change or is that?
No, not really. I mean... You're right. Coming from Westchester, it's not like, again, it wasn't like a crazy, insane amount of money, like where people...
In Newburgh, you already would have been mugged.
Yeah.
Or held hostage. Oh,
and...
God, for way less. So, yeah, okay. So Westchester is kind of like, okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Not like yawn, but no, like, you know, it's crazy because like, you know,
but it's a celebrity. I mean, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Because it's on TV and it's like, you know, people back home are like, oh, we watched you on the pay-per-view, blah, blah, blah. And it was fun.
Yeah.
It was definitely fun. But no one was like hitting me up like, oh, can I have like, you know, $10,000? I was just like, no, that didn't really happen. It was like, it was kind of like, life went on a little bit.
Yeah. And did you consulting?
Yeah. So in 2006, I started my consulting career. I did the quote unquote prudent thing, which happened to not be the most prudent thing, which was to invest in the stock market at the time.
Because 2007.
Yeah. 2007, 2008, and then 2009. Yeah. So I started my career in New York and, there was a lot of traveling involved that I think I wasn't really prepared for, and that kind of lifestyle where I don't know, I'm a very homebody type person, and all that travel kind of like wore me out over time. Excuse me. And so not only that, like by the end of 2007, I was just like staffed on this project where this is when the financial crisis started to show signs of, like, you know, happening. And so towards the end of 2007, I was, like, staffed on this project where, you know, we were trying to sell a project to a company that was clearly going under. And it kind of made me, like, really jaded about the whole, like, consulting business in general. I was like, this seems just very opportunistic and just trying to sell
your ethics were kind of being challenged a little bit.
Yeah,
like this is like not super you know what I mean?
Right,
feel good about it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like, what are we doing here? Like, why are, I mean, like, yeah, we're trying to maximize our own profits and whatever, but you know, like, this company is dead. Yeah. This company is not going to survive, and no matter like how you like fiddle with the numbers or anything like that. So it after like a couple months later, I was laid off. I think I was like the first of like many layoffs.
Were you like, well.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, at first I was kind of, like, distressed a little bit because I was like, oh, my God, this career that I worked my
entire
life
for. Well, it's like a
for.
Purpose. Like, what is my purpose now?
Yeah.
You know?
And that was when I was kind of like, all right, well, I have a decent amount of money still. Let me just breathe. Yeah. Let me just take a step back and think about what I want to do with my life. And this was, like, a few years after Harold and Kumar had come out, where you see, like, Asian Americans on screen. And throughout my life, I feel like I was a very theatrical person. I did music performance in college and in high school.
And probably being on you know, like a pay-per-view, there's a certain sense of, you know, entertainment value
and stuff like that.
So you're getting like a bit of that feeling and you know, cameras around you.
Sure.
And yeah.
Yeah, no, that was a very surreal experience. Yeah. I mean, like that was the first time, you know, I was mic'd up or had an interview on ESPN, and
now you're here, so how's,
yeah,
so it's
upgrade, right?
Yeah, but I because you know I'm familiar with your Facebook Watch show,
sure.
Just Doug, how do we get there? Because Facebook video is like a new, like I'm very familiar with Facebook video, and I actually was pitched something for Facebook Watch, whatever. How does that come about?
The Facebook Watch aspect of it specifically, or the pilot?
I guess itself? Start with the pilot, and then how does Facebook pick it up?
So the pilot came a few years ago when I started to think about it. It was kind of at a point in my career where I had felt kind of like I had no other option. It was kind of like, okay, it doesn't really matter, like age is just a number, blah, blah, blah. But like when you turn 30, 31, for me at least, it was kind of like, okay, where's my life going? What am I doing with my life? If I haven't like even made strides in this career that I've spent, you know, 5, 6, 7 years on, what am I doing? Like, you know, my contemporaries are running hedge funds, running whatever, and these big companies or, you know, whatever have you. And I'm kind of just like, you know, dicking around in Hollywood and not really like booking anything and getting nowhere.
Also like Asian, you know, Asian Americans are, you know, kind of underrepresented, but there's just not as many, you know, I know that from the YouTube world.
Right.
There's, you know, they have a very strong, I've worked with a lot of like Asian YouTube channels. And then I'm like the white guy in it. And if I go out and like if somebody's like, hey, I've seen you in some videos. And if that person's Asian, it's usually because I've been in one and two, like this Just Kidding Films, who has like a big YouTube.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah. I'm actually friends with Joe.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. I've worked with them. And they got their gym now. Wong Fu Productions. I've done videos with them. I went to London with them to do this YouTube thing. But if anyone's like, if they're Asian and they're like, I've seen you in some YouTube videos, it's either one of those two things. But they have such a strong loyalty because it's underrepresented or whatever.
Sure.
It is, because there's like tons of like white people, you know.
Really? I didn't notice that.
Oh, yeah, there's like dozens.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I counted. Yeah. So did you feel like you're like, I have to kind of take another shot?
It's kind of like a little bit of like Custer's Last Stand,
yeah,
type deal where, you know, if
you
I'm going to go out.
It,
yeah, exactly. If I go out, I'm going on blaze of glory. Yeah. This was like happening around 2014 where, you know, I had this audition for a role that was for a series regular on a TV show. And what excited me about this was like it was a role for an actor, it was specifically an Asian male, and it was also for like a musical. So it was like a singing role type thing. And so I was like really amped for it because, like, you know, I was doing musical performance as well before. And so I like really auditioned or like really practiced or whatever. And then I was really excited and go into the casting office. And she's like, oh, why don't you can choose what you want to do, the song or the part. I was like, oh, I'll just do the part because I really wanted to get the song. But not that I didn't prepare the part as well, you know, I did that, but just to get it out of the way. And so I did the part, and she was like, oh, I really like you. You, like, remind me of, like, a Seinfeld type of character and whatnot. But I already know they're not going to cast you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, they're looking for someone who's more jock. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then she's like, oh, yeah, so you don't have to do the song. I was like, oh, sure.
Yeah.
I guess. And then so I left. And like, you know, I appreciate, you know, her honesty. And all that, but at the same time, I was like, dude, like, what? I was disappointed at first. That was my first thing, because I was like, I didn't even get to do my song, whatever, that I prepared, like, weeks or whatever. And then, two, I was just, like, frustrated, because I was like, well, why the hell did you call me in if you already knew that they weren't going to cast me because of my look, you know? Like, it's not like I represent a jock-type character in my headshot or anything.
Yeah.
And so, three... I was just like in a state of despair, like total despair, where I was like, oh my God, there's this type of part only appears every 2-3 years. Like, and like all of us are fighting for that one part. Like, when am I going to have to wait another 3 years?
So you were like, I'm going to make my own luck kind of with make my own.
Not yet.
Okay.
This is kind of like, I was still in despair. I was still in like, oh God. So that's when I started to watch this show. I did what anyone depressed does. They binge Netflix.
Yeah.
And I watch a show, Louis by Louis C.K.
Sure.
And I started watching it. I just binged through it. And yeah, it kind of inspired me, because like I saw it, and then I saw a lot of different shows that were kind of like emulating that style, like Girls, and I think Togetherness, and shows that kind of like emphasized ultra realism over, like, you know, I guess theatricalism,
right,
in storytelling. And I was like, oh man, this is the direction in which storytelling is going. I need to make something like this for Asian Americans. I need to make something that fits this type of tone and storytelling for Asian Americans. And I thought it would be, like, you know, kind of like revolutionary in that sense. So that's like when I was kind of like, I started writing vignettes of my own life, and just started to just keep doing that. But in 2015, I teamed up with a writer who lives in LA, and I started writing a pilot TV episode, and that's kind of like where it all came from.
How did Facebook, you know, because the people like, oh, I didn't know Facebook is now, you know, into, you know, obviously original content.
Sure.
So how did that, so do you feel like that was like a good move? I mean, I'm assuming it's a good move. It sounds like a good move.
Yeah.
Does it? What comes next from that, I guess, for Just Doug?
So yeah. So Facebook, they recently launched a watch platform. Mm-hmm. This was kind of in August of last year, so it's
pretty
really
new.
Yeah. So in the past few years, Facebook has, you know, had a lot of video content on their feeds, and you view it. So I think what they wanted to do was basically create a landing spot for all these videos, so that, you know, somebody can consume it. I think their end game or something close to it is basically replacing the TV viewing experience, where basically, you know, when you turn on your TV, you have to, like, look for what you want to watch.
Right.
You have to, like, go through your DVR and, like, set all the things.
Facebook
and,
just,
like,
gives it to you.
Exactly. So Facebook is, like, the idea is to have a place where you just turn it on, and it gives you what you like based on your likes and preferences.
Sure.
And whatever. And you know, you just upvote or downvote based on, like, if you like it or not. And it'll just, like, calibrate towards what you want. And so I got connected to the watch platform. I got connected to their content guys. And when they saw our stuff, they were like, oh, we can give you an opportunity to be one of our watch members. So it was kind of like, I saw it as a good opportunity, because, like, you know, in YouTube's early days, a lot of the first movers in that space became big YouTube stars, I guess. Okay. Because just by sole reason of, like, you know, they were the only people doing the stuff that they were doing. And so I thought if there was a similar type of advantage for Facebook, that would be really good for our show because, like, you know, it'd get instant amount of exposure from people being like, oh, what's this Facebook Watch thing? Oh, let me check it out. Oh, what do they have? Oh, Just Doug, let me see that. So that's kind of like my mentality going in.
And that's kind of like it has like a dating aspect to it, or just like your life, you know, just like your life.
My show, or
yeah, your show.
Yeah, so my show is like semi-autobiographical. I want to hesitate when I say it's similar to Master of None because, you know, I wrote this before that even came out. And I do think there are clear differences because Master of None I see as a show that's very episodic or like based on ideas or you know, stuff in a stand-up routine. Whereas my show, I think, is more narrative based.
Right.
It's more of a character arc to it. Like, you know, my character going through Hollywood and figuring out the ins and outs of the industry. And so I would say that, like, what was I saying again?
So what comes next? to kind of like wrap it up, like what comes next for Just Doug, or what comes next for you as far as Hollywood or your life, or like what's next for you and the show and everything?
Yeah, so for the show, actually, what's next? We have some pretty exciting stuff. We're going to be on there's this platform called Drama Fever. It's a platform started a decade ago. They basically have actually the opposite of what Hollywood does. Hollywood makes content, ships it over to China. So they bring over Asian dramas and bring it over to America or the Western part of the world. And so one of their executives reached out to me when they saw the show and was like, oh, we can feature your show, because he wants to start a English speaking initiative there. And so we can feature your show and get it to the audience that it's intended for. So I'm pretty excited about that. We're going to be on there probably around, I think the date's February 16th.
And what's the website for that?
It's dramafever.com.
Okay.
So typically has like Korean dramas and Chinese dramas, but this will be the first show, I think, that's exclusively like English speaking on their platform.
And where can we find you otherwise?
You could find me on Twitter or Instagram. My Twitter handle is Sweet Justice. My Instagram is Vindicating Justice.
Are you a hitman? I don't.
It's
way off brand.
So justice is like a thing. It was like a catchphrase of mine. I mean, the LLC I created for the show is Justice Tech Industries.
Okay.
Just Doug. I mean, that's
where it
kind of comes from.
Got it.
Where like it's a double meaning.
Sounds like you're like, vigilante.
Yeah.
It's very tough. It's very tough. I'm like, whoa. Well, thanks for being here. I wish we could talk more about, but we'll follow up and see how everything's going.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm just going to think about that dollar I found in my pocket, I guess.
Yeah. Without